Hello and welcome to another episode of the Miles World Podcast, a podcast that enables us to speak to fascinating, inspiring people. If you like this episode, share it with your friends. Give us a review on iTunes or Amazon. Most importantly, subscribe. And today's inspiring and transcendent guest is Jimmy Shotti Mehin. A man who has worked many decades behind the scenes in casinos. And a man who has managed to translate all of those experiences to building his own company, Nomadic Fun Casino Hire. They're a company that bring great value to their customers and make them feel like royalty. He's a guest you're going to love. And all there is to say, enjoy this episode and let us speak to Jimmy. How have you been keeping, what you've been doing, and like, how have you been keeping busy during the pandemic?
Oh, it's interesting. Just before the pandemic, the business was growing, because it was a land-based company, and COVID-19 happened, and we went off the cliff like most other businesses did. Anyway, during the, when we went into the first lockdown, I was thinking of ways to make money, and I started thinking of interactive things we could do, and the blackjack idea popped up. I spent some time learning how to use Zoom and learning how to use cameras, and somewhere down the line, we ended up with this product. So that's what I've been doing most of the time.
And like, tell us about, how has it been? Like, how have people responded to it? And how have you sort of adapted to this climate in regards to what you normally do?
Okay. When we moved into the lockdown, it's actually funny how this really happened. When we moved into the lockdown, I couldn't find my accountant. He had been very ill. I believe he had cancer. And just as he was coming out of cancer, he had COVID. He was one of the first ones. I couldn't find him. I didn't know where he was. And I went to look for him. I think this was sometimes in March. And his wife explained that he was in the hospital and so many of his clients were looking for him. Anyway, there was a deadline of, I believe, the 23rd of April. And I met up with him early in April, and he explained to me that he hadn't handed in my tax returns, but he would make sure everything got in before the deadline. People were finding out if they were eligible. I looked in there and I found out I was ineligible because my things were handed in on the 27th of April. So that means I was not going to receive any support, and I would have to find a way to make money. This was during the time when people started having all these quizzes, and people would invite you and you would join them for a night of fun and questions. But I noticed very quickly that you didn't know much about all the other guests. You only knew the quiz master at the end of the night. And I started thinking of how I could come up with something much more interactive. Anyway, somewhere down the line, I started considering blackjack. But I didn't know how to use cameras. I didn't know how, I hadn't used Zoom much apart from logging onto a few events. But the moment I started doing it and inviting friends, people brought their expertise into play. And this was how the whole thing really started.
And did it just sort of snowball from there? Like, you put on these events and like, people were like, oh my God, Jimmy is the man. Like, if you guys want to have some fun, he is the zany. He gives the juice.
I didn't. I wish it worked that way. No, it didn't. I started having blackjack nights twice a week. I think sometimes three times a week. And I was doing it for free. And people would come on, and I didn't know how to get the camera to cover me and the table. But I'd have advice from friends. And one day someone called me up. He wanted to have a blackjack night with his family. He had seen me doing the live events and he really liked what I did. He said, oh, he would like me to have something for his family scattered around the country. I said, to be fair, it's not going to be very professional. But he said, nah, I've seen you. I've seen you when you have live events and I think you can make it work. Anyway, I had about a week. During that week, I spoke to everyone. You know, like people who worked with videos, people who knew things about lighting. And at the end of the week, we had our first event. I believe that was in June. The moment we had that event, I started visiting networking events. I didn't know much about networking either. I'd always depended on having a website out there and hoping people would find us. I started visiting networking events, and the more I got to know people, the more they started hiring us. And at the moment, it's funny because all our weekends are booked till the end of March at the moment. So that's something on its own, something I'm grateful for.
Ooh. And like, tell us your journey about like how you started in casinos and how like you turned it into sort of the company it is now.
Okay. I started playing cards when I was very young. In Nigeria, you have people, they call them Maygads. They look after your house. They're from the Hausa tribe. And most of them would often play cards. I think I was about 13 or 14. I would sneak in there and play cards with them. I just enjoyed it. I don't know if they played for money. I didn't play for money. I didn't have any money, but I joined them. And suddenly I started beating a few of them. Then I started playing with friends. By the time I finished my first degree and came back to England, because my parents had taken us to England when we were younger, I decided I wasn't going to gamble because it was something my family didn't really agree with. Anyway, in 95, I went to Leeds to study and I started going into casinos out of boredom. I didn't know many people out there. I was bored in the evening and I'd go in there. I started going in there. And like most beginners, I started winning early. Then I started losing. And when I started losing, I started losing much more than I could afford to lose. which is probably something that a lot of people who've spent a lot of time in casinos understand. At the time, I thought I used to go into casinos for the money. It's years later on, I learned to understand that I was going there because there was this communal thing. They all knew each other. And sadly, they gossiped about each other a lot as well. But there was always this, oh, where's Marvin today? Where's Joe today? Where's Steven today? They had that little thing going on. It was a little clique. They all belonged to the same casino. They felt like they were part of one family. You can't explain it, but it's something that casino games, that's what casino, if you play poker and you play tournaments, you get to know everyone. I did that for a few years. And then I ended up working in the industry. I ended up working in the card room. I think it became one of the most famous card rooms in London. It was called the Gutshot. That's where I really grew. I met a gentleman called Roy Houghton. Unfortunately, we lost him last year. He was different from every other card room manager I knew. He cared about people. He really cared about people. He knew everyone's names. He just seemed to know so much about people, and he always had this way of reaching out, and he would have £5 tournaments that would bring ladies in and bring beginners in and things like that. He changed my perspective of gambling. You see, gambling, the side of gambling that we all get used to is where we're all going for it and gambling for large amounts of money, and it's all glamorous. But no one talks about, they do, but we don't often look at the darker side of it, where we talk about depression and anger and frustration and divorce and all those things that come with it. This was the first man I knew who focused on those things. He would have like a night for students in Cambridge. And they would have prizes. or they would have something for Shell. And I think they called it negotiating skills course. That was a good one. They called it this negotiating skills course, and the course was Texas Hold'em Poker. Because I went to a lot of those events with him, I saw the other side, the side of having casino games for fun. You know, how you could make people have a good time, how you can make people really laugh without them playing for money. And I think that influenced what I became, when I started moving closer to having my own business, that greatly influenced me.
And how did he manage to maintain the relationships with all these people and like really make it like that? Because I mean, he must have had no sleep or something.
Sometimes I think it's just some kind of a talent, because you would have 80 people walk through the door, and he knew everyone's names. That I found fascinating, because he was probably a man in his 60s, and he had this passion about people. And you see, people like that, they sometimes influence you. It was around that time I started to realize that I was more passionate about hearing people laugh, about seeing them having fun, about seeing them being treated with dignity. Because like the normal way things would work, if you were losing, or you got, if you, have you ever played poker before?
Afraid not.
No, okay. If you've ever played in a poker tournament, the moment you get knocked out of a tournament, the dealer screams, "Player out," and you do that walk of shame. The whole room looks around and they think, "Oh God, he's gone," and you walk away. And it had this way of excluding you. Or like a guy loses his money in a casino and suddenly he kind of does that walk of shame. It's a way of telling you that, okay, you've had enough money, good night. And he changed that, in my view. He had this way of making people always feel welcome. When I first worked with him at the Gut Shot, he would go over to someone and say, "Oh, would you like a coffee?" Yeah, and the guy would talk, and people would laugh and everything. And this was a guy who had just lost his little money. But you always made sure that people walked away with dignity. And that influenced me. It made me realize that whenever I saw people being treated that way, it made me happier, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's. I think I see what you mean. It's a bit like with comedians. When we make people laugh, it makes us feel good.
That's
I don't know what it's called, but it's a funny effect, isn't it? But maybe it's a bit like the psychology of saying if you smile at someone, they'll smile back at you. So.
Yes, definitely. That's the effect, because if people often say things like hurt people hurt, and I don't know how that really works in life, but I understand the thing that if when I see people feeling happy, it makes me feel happy. I never feel like, oh, okay, this guy is feeling happy and that makes me feel angry. No. If I feel you celebrating, if you're celebrating over, oh, I just got married, oh, I just won a contract, it gives me hope that what you've got, I can have too, because I know you. And that's always been my nature. You get what I mean? I celebrate with people because it makes me feel encouraged too. And that's one of the things that has helped me with my journey.
And that's what gets you to it. And is that how you, with the company's motto of like, we make you feel like royalty, and that came from your experience of working with that man, and sort of that's
it definitely, you see, I think when I first started my company, one of the first things I did was I wrote down everything I liked about casinos, and I wrote down everything I didn't like about casinos. And the first thing I found out that I didn't like was the fact that whenever people would run out of money, they treated them badly. That's my opinion. I don't have to be right. But there was always this, oh, if when you don't have money, please don't sit here. Oh, if you're not playing, please stand away from the table. That's the culture. You get what? I'm sure they've never done it to harm anyone, but it's just the culture. If you don't have any money, why are you here? why are you hanging around? Do you get what I mean? So it's not supposed to include you when you can't afford it.
Yeah. It creates a bit of a funny atmosphere, isn't it, with money? They do say that money is very evil. I mean, it's needed and it's important. Yeah. But when everything's just focused on money, it creates a toxic atmosphere.
Every time.
I think a lot of people don't see it is that if you create a massive value and you're doing something you enjoy and you have a lot of energy in, the money will come. If you focus on delivering a very good product that you're enjoying, you're passionate about, and you put a lot of effort to make people have a great time with your product, then the money will flow.
I think so. I hope so.
I hope so. Yeah.
I hope so. I think so because there's so many things that I've learned in the last few years. Actually, I've learned more in the last year about people than ever before. I never realized how much people are willing to help each other if you reach out.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Because like I've had so many very talented people who know so much about cameras and videos and all that, who've spoken to me and explained things to me, and I haven't had to pay them a penny. But just because I've reached out to them and I've been able to ask these questions, they feel so happy to help you along your journey. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I find that quite funny. Yeah, I'm amazed also during the pandemic and how people, when you talk about something they love doing, they love talking about it and they love helping other people with it. It's amazing where that comes from.
Yeah, it's something that I don't think people talk about enough. You get what I mean? Because my business has grown a lot during this pandemic because I've met so many people who are so skilled at what they do. And they've been able to just say, look, okay, if you want to do this, maybe what you really need to do is find out how you can get your camera 2 meters away and make it at your head level and put the lights in this position and that position. And I've gone home and tried it and I thought, whoa, okay, this really works. But those are things that before the lockdown, first of all, I don't even think they would have had the time.
No.
Because they weren't stuck at home. They were probably traveling somewhere, doing something else, and no one really had much time. But during this lockdown, I've found out that so many people, if you're happy to find out more, people will share information with you.
Yeah. What do you think that brings them about? What do you think brings about the generosity of a lot of people?
I think if you're going through the same things, when we're going through the same things, you have a bit of empathy for each other. When we take the politics out of situations, it's always a better thing, in my opinion. This was also one of the things that I noticed about when I used to work in casinos, because I did a lot of traveling, you know, working as a freelance dealer at some point. But one of the key things I felt was that most of those businesses were run by accountants. That's the truth. And because everything was run by accountants, they focused on the bottom dollar every time. It was, how can we make more money in this area? How can we make an extra buck in this area and all that? And whenever you focus on that area, you always forget that you're dealing with human beings. If you're thinking, okay, what we need, like you would have all these signs around saying, responsible gambling, when the fun stops, you must stop and all that. But then you look around you and you think, hold on a second, this doesn't look like much fun. Why aren't you stopping people? But that's because the people who work there would know, but they don't make the decisions. It's the accountants that make the decisions. And the motto is actually, fellowship is always greater than the price. That's the whole thing. And then the idea is that we treat everyone like royalty. That means once you are having a nomadic event, we want you to feel special all the way through. We don't want you to feel like you're not welcome at any time. That's the idea.
But and how many people do you generally have at the events when they're live and like now on Zoom?
Okay, for the live events, sometimes you'd have charities where you'd have a few hundred. One of the biggest events I can remember is doing a casino night for University of Kent. And that, for their freshers, the freshers week, I could not tell you how many people were there. But I remember driving up with the van and noticing a long queue going around the block. And the lady in the van with me said, "Wow, they've come to see us." I thought, "Oh God, that's not good. That's pressure." But with the Zoom thing, when we started, we started with 7 people on a blackjack table. And I noticed that we could they could form teams. So you could have a couple, sometimes with their kids, making decisions on a box. Have you ever played blackjack before?
A while ago, but I've forgotten how to play it.
Okay. Sometimes what I would do is I'd create, you'd have 7 boxes and you'd have one family making decisions on one box. So you can hear the husband and the wife and the kids making decisions and the wife saying, "Come on, why would you want to bet 50? Oh, we should make it 25. And they say, we're not playing for real money. And so you create that kind of banter. You create that kind of banter. So you can have up to 20 people in there playing on one table.
You give me a funny idea there. Could be funny if it was like a family sketch of like, "Right, son, if you don't win this game of blackjack, you're grounded."
No, actually, I've got a funny story there. And this is a true story. I was running an event one day and quite a few people logged on. They had family all over. So some people logged on and some were playing and some were not, but they had team names. And they had 15. Now, the whole idea of blackjack is to get as closer to 21 than the croupier. That's me. That's how you win. And this gentleman was asking his 15 or 16-year-old boy to make a call on his hand that had 14 against the 9. And the kid said, "No, Dad, I don't want to do that. If I get it wrong, you're going to be mad with me." And he was saying, "No, you need to step up. You're going to be a man one day and you're going to have to make big decisions." And his wife was encouraging him. Anyway, the kid made the call and hit a 7 and made 21. So they were all rejoicing and kind of celebrating. And I was sure I heard at that time someone said, "Good lad, good lad." But I stopped, I looked around, I thought, I don't see who said that. But I didn't pay any attention. Anyway, the next morning, because it was recorded, I was playing it back because this was the early time when I was learning how to improve things. I was watching it and it was a very old man. So I recorded, I put it together, put it unlisted and sent it to the gentleman that this was your event for last night for your perusal. Thank you for hiring us. And he called me a few hours later. He said, "Oh my God, did you see what happened around the 46th or 47th minute?" I said, "The old man." He said, "Yeah, that's my granddad in York." His granddad, not his son's, his 90-something-year-old granddad in York. I could feel the hair on my hands rise because I thought, wow, you've just captured the moment there. Because when I realized exactly what happened there, I said, wow, at least you've got that to remember. He said, "Yeah, he's never going to forget that." And that's a true story.
Ooh. And on the flip side of that, what's been a story during your times in casinos and like building a business that have really been scary or been memorable for the wrong reasons?
Okay, I'll tell you. When I first started playing in Leeds, I was a student in Leeds. I didn't have much money, but I went in there anyway, hoping maybe I could get lucky. I used to play roulette. But on one night, there was a gentleman there playing. He was not young. He was winning, and everyone stopped playing. And he had all these numbers. He was having hundreds of pounds on numbers and splits, and he kept hitting. Anyway, I think they tried to spin the ball, and they tried to spin it too early. And he got cross with them and said, "Look, I'm the only one playing on the table. What's the rush? I'm leaving." And you could see the pit bosses all sprinting all over the place, and they were all worried. And he left. And I was thinking, wow, I wish I was this man. Look at him. He's going to be rich. I don't even know how much money he's won. But they all looked worried, and the casino, every place there, everyone, they were all talking about it. A year later, I came into the same casino and I saw the man playing roulette, and he had like £1 chips on numbers, and he was getting cross about how he felt someone had moved his number. And I said, hold on, that makes no sense. That's the man I saw practically break the bank the other day. And someone said, oh, yeah, oh, he's skint now. And I thought, what? That was the first time I realized that don't sit there feeling so happy when you see people winning in casinos, because you never see the flip side. If I had based what I'd seen only on him winning, I'd have been chasing that dream all my life. That day, I realized something very important. The odds are always against you. And if you stay long enough, they'll get it back.
And one thing I want to ask, so for someone that doesn't know what casinos are like and like what these card games are like, how do they work? Because I've seen Casino Royale, and it's quite a funny scene between Le Chiffre and James Bond. I mean, does it really go down like that? And they're like, oops, or like trying to read each other. And is it a game of chess like that?
Poker, that what you were watching, was that's called Texas Hold'em Poker. And I think that was a bit exaggerated. There's actually something about that story. You know, you see the gut shot. If you watch that Casino Royale and you watch the end, it will tell you about the when they're thanking people at the end, they talk about the gut shot poker club. Because the gentleman who plays the role of the manager came to the gut shot to learn about Texas Hold'em. So I actually met him. And the kid who went to train them was like an 18, 19-year-old kid called Carl. He's called Carl. And he was one of our most talented dealers, poker dealers. The whole thing about poker in particular, it's a game of skill and chance combined. The better players at the end of the day generally get the money. But it can go over a long period. You have a lot of swings in the game where you win and you lose over a long period. But the better players generally get the money. What you saw in that hand was quite extreme. You'd have to be a very weak player to just throw £1 million into the middle when you've got the fourth best hand. Professionals won't play like that. No. You get what? There's some hands that you can't. You have to look at and think, hold on, there's a good chance I might be losing here. But everyone in that scene just threw their money in the middle willy-nilly and said, oh God, and you don't really see that. Not that much. Not five players, no.
What would you do if you saw that?
When they started the EPT, this was... Okay, just after the gut shot closed, I worked as a freelance dealer, and you got to travel to quite a few places, and you got to see some of these very big games. I've had the opportunity to deal in some of those big games, and I won't lie to you. There are times that the amount of money in the middle has been so scary that you're dealing the hand, and you just think to yourself, you know what? Switch off. It's just a hand. Because if you get too caught up in how much money is on the table, you'll start making mistakes. So it's just a game. You know what? Take the emotions away from it. That's what the best players do, actually.
And they obviously have a lot of rituals or a lot of things that they do beforehand or even during the game to keep themselves in the right mindset that you don't know of.
I think a lot of them study a lot. You see, if you look at the best poker players out there, and a lot of them are quite scientific. You have the old school players who it was all about reading players, but the younger ones, they know all the odds of the hands they're playing. They've played millions of hands online. So every time they sit there and look at the hands, they have a good idea of what the odds are on them winning this hand. So they're fearless, because if they know that, if somebody tells you that, okay, we're going to flip a coin 10 times, and all I have to do, all I have to do is get heads twice out of 10, I think you'll confidently put your money there except if you feel you're getting cheated. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, perfect.
And that's what the best players do. They put the odds so massively in their favor. Casino games are a different proposition. The odds are always against you.
Yeah. Is there any tricks to go by? Any tricks for insiders? No, I'm joking. Don't do that.
There's something strange though. That, but it's changed over the years. Back in the day, people used to play a lot of blackjack, and they used to play with four decks. So you had professional card counters, and I'm sure you've probably watched some movies. I think there's one called 21. 21 was where this professional team of card counters used to work in Vegas, and you've got old movies. But over the years, they've changed that because the machines that deal blackjack now are random. They keep randomly mixing up the cards, so you don't have that edge. Roulette, you don't have that edge. I learned that the hard way. I used to go home and write everything on paper thinking, okay, if you bet this way, maybe you could. Nope, you have no edge in those games.
How does blackjack compare with poker?
Blackjack is very different. Blackjack is a game of where you're trying to make 21 and make as close as 21. The best way of putting it is get closer to 21 than the croupier. That's how you win. When you're playing poker, you're playing against other players around the table. And what really happens is that if you are much better than them, if you have better knowledge of the game, better knowledge of the odds, you will make less mistakes than them. That's why it's different. The reason why it's also harder to win at poker, actually, is because one, if you're emotional, then you lose more than you should when you're having a bad day. Or two, if the rake, and that I have to explain, the casino take a certain amount out of every hand. If that's too high, then you can't beat the game. But the game of poker is a game of skill and luck combined. Blackjack, roulette, most of the other games, they're games of chance, always.
You go on. And which is your favorite casino game?
It's definitely poker, Texas Hold'em. Actually, I like mixed games, but it's all poker games, definitely. Definitely.
And what were some scenes that you would often see with people when they're, so you mentioned a bit of poker, but like you mentioned before we started this, that there's certain signs that you have to look for in terms of someone being dodgy or iffy. And so how do you spot nefarious characters in casinos and how do you handle them?
Okay, that you see, I'll tell you what it is. This is it. You see, like, I guess it's like watching, you might have a lot of friends who love to have a drink. I mean, you might know a few people who love to have a drink. There's some people, when they start drinking, the reaction you get out of them is they start looking for reasons to fight people. They start saying, hey, what are you looking at? Oh, why are you sitting there? And they start reacting. Some people are what we call happy drunks. They enjoy themselves, they laugh, and they go home. When you're playing poker, what you're doing is you're paying attention to what your opponents are doing. Are they getting angry? Are they looking stressed? Are they looking at their watches every minute? Do they need to catch the next train? All the information you can gather, those are the things that help you to make decisions. If someone is getting angry, they make bad decisions. If somebody is getting stressed and overreacting with the croupiers and shouting at them, you start noticing that, ooh, they're not in a good place. They're going to make more mistakes. If I was a card room manager and I was sitting there watching somebody who starts getting upset and starts saying, what are you looking at? It's probably time to have a quick word with them that maybe it's a good idea to get them to leave on that day and come back, because those are the areas that the trouble comes from. Nothing comes out of the blue, ever.
Ooh.
That's true.
And what's been the maddest thing you've seen in a casino? Like where someone's just like, right, I'm just going to attack everyone or something. I'm just start swinging random people. Have you seen anything like that?
I've seen a lot of crazy things happen over the years. I have seen quite a few crazy things. I've seen Okay, I always remember I was walking somewhere once, and this guy was getting a bit, he was getting a bit leery. He'd been drinking a lot and he was getting abusive and rude, but he had a lot of money. And I kept advising him that, look, I was going to leave. I think I was going to leave at 11. And I said, excuse me, I think you need to advise this guy to go home. I think the best thing we can actually do is put him in a taxi. Because sometimes if you go over to somebody and we say, look, we've ordered you a taxi, and we'll order a taxi to bring you back tomorrow. You're welcome. The way you say it might influence them, or might at least make them know you care. But the players would have been upset because he was losing money and he seemed a bit stressed. Anyway, I went back home that day. I came back the next day. He was in a cell. He had thrown a bottle at one of the players. He had gone berserk in the club, and they had had to get the police to move him. Personally, I had seen that coming from a mile, and I think others had, but they just felt, oh, he's losing money. We're not going to pay him any attention. I think that's wrong, but that's my opinion.
Okay, and when, in regards to like when you started doing this sort of thing, how did you change and learn throughout the years? How did you improve and get better at it?
When I first started, I really struggled. I knew everything I needed to know about casino games. I'd been around the games for a long time, but I knew very little about business. I knew even less about websites. I knew less about how I was supposed to find customers. I just felt, oh, I had this service and people were going to love it. And the idea was to make people come and play games without money, without the stress of losing, and they would come to me. But within a short while, I learned that that's not how it works. You need to have a good idea of everything that surrounds the business, not just the business itself. You need to know a bit more about SEO. You need to be speaking to the right people. And the only way you'll know the right people is by doing your research. You need to know what good looks like, if you understand what I'm saying. If you're talking to somebody and you say, I want you to help me with my website, and they do all the work, and you don't know what good looks like, it can look beautiful and fresh, but the SEO work might be really bad and you won't reach anyone. So until you have an idea of the other sides of the business, like now I know much more about networking. I go to a lot of events and meet so many business owners. And these are the guys who often refer other people to you. But when I first started, I just created a website and sat by the phone, and it was not happening. It wasn't happening. I wasn't getting enough. I was getting referrals from a few people I'd worked with, and that was not enough to sustain the business.
And the reason why it worked more in regards to a lot of networking events is because these people have been through a lot of trials and tribulations, and they've got more experience. It's like with NLP, isn't it? The more options you have available to you, the more likely you're going to make a better decision.
That's right. And the more you speak, and the more you actually interact with people who have gone before you, it doesn't have to be in your field. It doesn't necessarily have, but they know the challenges you deal with, like hiring staff. When I first started, people would just say to me, oh, yeah, I'm interested. Come on, this and that. I live close to you. Why don't I work with you? But now I know you want somebody who has your values. You want somebody who sees it the way you see it. Like, I want people to come in there and have fun. I don't want them to come in there and lose money. I think people have enough problems of their own. I don't need to give them a new one. If you hire someone who all he thinks of is how to make as much money as possible, he won't care about treating them kindly. That's just a fact.
Yeah, I've counted that a few times. It's and then is that also in terms of, I think what I've learned recently during lockdown and little things I've been doing is that key things like trust and, you've got to share the same values. You've got to be on the same page, and it's got to mean more to them, because otherwise what I've noticed in some of the bad jobs I worked in, like I worked in Starbucks and McDonald's, whatever, once work is finished, they wouldn't bother.
Yes, I get that. Yeah, there's never that extra mile.
you need people that go that extra mile, because otherwise the product's not going to be that good.
I'll give you an example of what I mean, and this is the trial I'm going through right now. I've never had any, no one has ever done what I really do right now. So I was the first person. So one of the first things I had was how to price it. But the second issue I started having was, as soon as I started having a lot of business, I started getting a lot of reviews. And they were all five star reviews on my page. Then you start thinking, hold on, when you hire people, are you going to be able to maintain that? Are they going to try? Are they going to go that extra length to make sure that the guests feel special? These are things that you can, that you have to learn very quickly. I spoke to a businessman. He said to me, don't worry about that. When you have staff working for you, there's a chance you won't get five-star reviews all the time. But what becomes important is how you respond to the queries or to the reviews. That's what becomes important. So I thought, okay. But then also learning to know that you want people who share the same values with you, the people who care, who have that heartfelt thing about making people laugh, that those are the people you hire. And you said it with the McDonald's and Starbucks thing. Once the clock is up, they don't care anymore.
Yeah. And yeah. How do you screen it? Because, like, I mean, they say that, this is a strange thing to say, but they say that women like to test men or like to find out what they are. But I mean, in your position, you have to try to qualify people to see who you're dealing with. And how do you get better at that?
That's a good one. I'm going to ask my wife that question afterwards, but let me think about that for one second. I think you should be putting questions to them, finding out how passionate they are about people. Because honestly, if you ask, you do get questions. People do give you their answers. If your questions are not direct, you understand what I mean? Okay, like I'll explain what I mean to you. I have a business where I try to treat people like royalty. Now, what that means to me is that I listen to them and I pay attention to what they want rather than what I think they should have. It also means that I make sure I'm always there on time so they don't spend any time worrying about me being late or not showing up. And then one of the most important things I've learned is that to treat people like royalty, you learn never to pester them or spam them. Now, if you are talking to somebody and you ask little questions and their attitude towards spamming people is part of the business, it's not for you. If I've hired someone before to do an event at the university and he walked off a table, and I had to go and get him out and say, look, if you cost me this job, I will sue you. I said, what's the problem? He said, I don't like students. Oh, hold on a second. I did tell you you were doing a gig at a university. Man, you're going to have to swallow that and enjoy tonight. But there's no way I'm letting you do this. Now, if I had that conversation long before I hired him that he doesn't like students and he finds them annoying, he wouldn't have been there. But at the time, I just started out, I just looked for people who had worked in casinos before without paying attention to how they saw people. You know, do you understand what I mean? These are things I'm learning now.
And how would you have found that before?
My questions would have been more about, have you ever met students before? What do you think about them? If you think they're just loud and they're, well, because I like being around young people. I think they've got so much energy. I love their mindset as well, because they have this entrepreneurial mindset. My generation, we don't have that. It's true. My generation, we were trained to think about how to work for people and end up with a pension. Your generation, you're trained right from the word go to be entrepreneurs. So when I'm around young people, I love the energy that comes into play. If I was trying to hire someone, the questions would be more like, how do you feel about young people? What do you think about? Because if their answers will always shine through. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. If you ask it direct, they'll be like, or they will hide it, or they'll lie blatantly. But yeah. If you give them enough room to hang themselves, which is what you do.
Exactly. It's like thinking of creative ways to ask the same question. That's the key.
Yeah. I think Game of Thrones sort of pinpoints it quite well. I know it's a weird description, but if you look at Jon Snow and Tyrion, Tyrion is probably the right way to go about doing things. He's a good person, but he does it smart. Whereas Jon Snow, he does it honestly, but he does it stupidly.
Exactly. Exactly. It's true. It's true. It's true. And maybe that's what I'm learning now. It's learning how to. It's even not being emotional. Just take all the facts and look at them.
It's funny with everything you bring up, and it is. I'm guessing when you're doing all these shows, you maybe have to spend like at least a couple of hours beforehand getting everything all prepared.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And it only takes one little thing, either with yourself or someone in your team, or little thing not going right that you've not checked out, for the whole thing to go.
Actually, it's one thing I've learned about the fun casino business is how quickly you have to be able to adjust, because honestly, things do go wrong all the time. I've seen somebody arrive at a venue once and they couldn't find the roulette ball, and they used what are those kind of sweets you have, the white ones, the round ones. That became the roulette. There's I'm trying to remember what it's called. Those the very sweet ones. You have different colors, but they have these ones that are white. And he used one of those as the ball, because you have to adjust. Like, I remember there was a time when we arrived at one of the venues. We'd moved from one venue to the other, and we found that one of the legs was missing, and they had to use the speaker. One of the speakers as the support for the leg. You have to adjust very quickly. You never know what might go wrong. And if you don't know how to adjust, it's not... I think that happens with events anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
They're very light on their feet. Anything happens, what do we do? You have to think quickly. You get what I mean? But you prepare.
And how many times has it been where your preparation has saved you?
Oh, many times. I was not very good at preparing when I was younger. And I was late for everything. And when I started walking, you know, the higher you go, you realize that showing up early or preparing well is actually the key. Once you're very well prepared, most things become easier because all the work has been done beforehand. Like, we're having this podcast now, and I've had a bit of time to think about what are the things that you are interested in. If I just showed up out of the blue and you asked me a few questions, I might be sitting there looking a bit dazed or confused. So I think it's all about preparation, and it helps.
Yeah. And you learn as you go along. Like, the podcast, it's changed a lot through over the years. Well, not years, but over the months since I've started it, it's changed completely. And it's going to change again. How have you changed and developed over the years with the company as a whole? Like,
I think everything has changed completely because, like I said, when I first started, even my idea of how to get business, how to hire staff, everything has changed over the years because I've learned more. I speak to a lot of business owners. I've learned more about how to put value in your business, how to build your brand, and all these things. Some people say, oh, they read them in books. I don't know. I've spoken to business owners a lot more, because when you speak to people who are going through things or have been through things you are now going through, they really tell you. It's like being around somebody cooking. Someone can give you a book with all the recipe, but they never really can show you how the salt, how much salt needs to go in, or exactly how you need to rinse the meat. But when you're sitting there watching someone do it, it's different. It's a different experience. Now it's changed a lot. Everything I know about how to build a business has changed over the years.
And how has it shaped you now? Like, what were you the, what was Jimmy before the business, and what, who is Jimmy now?
I think I was totally clueless about business. I was happy-go-lucky. And I just had this impression that, oh, and once I started it, everything would fall into place. Now I'm more aware that you need to do the work behind the scenes. You need to have a good idea of what you're looking for. You need to have a clearer vision of what you're trying to do, not just hope that, oh, everything is going to fall into place, because it won't.
Be open to things going out of plan, but like, have a clear goal, but be prepared that like not every task you want is going to get completed and you have to adjust it.
That's right.
And how do you use like SMART goals and like motivational with your staff, like with people, to get them to do what you need them to do?
First of all, I've always believed that if you believe in people, you often get the best out of them. It's not always the case, but if you trust in people, what it is learning how to work with people. Like, I'll give you an example of what I mean. You might have somebody who's very good at live events, but knows very little about technology and cares less about learning. The way you address those issues with that person will definitely be different from somebody who has all the technical skills but cares less about running an event. You meet them where they are and say, look, how can we work together? How can we make this? You know, you understand there are certain things you need. You probably need them to like people, to enjoy working with people. If those things are not there, there's no point. But where they have weaknesses, you ask, look, okay, do you want to have a technician nearby when you're working? So that makes you feel comfortable and confident. You work with people all the time. That's what I see. I love working with some of these small companies because they have these blackjack nights and they give them vouchers. And I love it because it shows them that this guy actually cares about them, that this their owner is thinking about their well-being and mental health, even though they're working remotely, by having these nights for them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you ask them certain questions to show that you're interested in finding out them and how to meet their needs, so yes, that they can meet your needs, and that way it's a good relationship in a way.
That's right. Rather than just as you know, like I hear it all the time. Oh, I'm working remotely, and oh, my bosses are just setting all these unrealistic deadlines for me, and they don't care. And I think, actually, sometimes I think we've set up all this technology is there, but we've forgotten that they're human beings who are going to have to run them.
Yeah, and no one wants to be treated like an object or like some sort of statistic. If you say, what's an experience that's seeing you as an example of what not to do? Like going to McDonald's, I suppose, and people say, can I take your order? Boom.
No, it's you see, it's this. When you walk somewhere, I remember I read this somewhere where people say, nobody cares what you know until they know you care. Like, let me give you an example of what I mean. You can know somebody who writes a book, but he's rude. He has no time for his friends. He never gets back to you. He thinks everything should revolve around him. It doesn't matter what the book is about. You're probably not going to read it. Not because the book is not good, but because you think that the person who wrote the book, you don't really respect their values so much. So what happens a lot of the time is that a lot of our, if I come into a place and somebody comes over to me and smiles and says, oh, hello, oh, please sit down, let me see how I can help you. What would you like? And I place my order and you show up and the food is not up to scratch. Just because you've treated me with dignity and care, the way I might respond, I might call you over and say, excuse me, this is not what I ordered. But the way I will say it, and I might not say anything because I feel you're trying your best. But if I come in and you treat me in a bad manner, and then you bring, the fact is, even before you bring that food, I might be biased already. Thinking that, okay, you think I've come here to spend my money to be insulted by you? And then you show up and the food is no good. How do you think I'm going to respond?
One star of you.
Exactly. Exactly. I've met people. I remember people. I remember there's a young lady. I don't know where she is. She was working in a casino. And I saw how she treated these old men who were so grumpy. But the way she treated them with dignity. I remember one of those guys smiled and said, I'm really sorry. I've been going through a bad day and I feel I'm taking it out on you. If I could find her today, I'd hire on the spot. Honestly. It's true. I wouldn't ask any questions because I could see that she has that thing. She had this way of caring about them. You get what I mean? She was doing her job and I'm sure she wasn't paid to mollycoddle them or treat them like babies. But there's a way she had this thing about them that she would calm them down and do everything to make sure they were having a great time.
That's what it's about in life as well. And I suppose, is that your biggest sort of lesson in life? That's one of your big things. Treat people well and make people feel like family in a way.
Life throws enough at people. Life throws a lot of curveballs at people. And I kind of believe, for me, I want them to feel like when they're here, they mean something. Do you get what I mean? If somebody has to spend time with you, you want them to walk away and feel, you know what? I'm somebody. Do you get that?
Yeah.
That this guy doesn't just look at me as if I'm a waste of space or I'm a loser. I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to go into a casino and walk out with no money. With them looking at you like, look, you've got no money. Look, somebody else needs this chair. It's not a good feeling. And in life, people get that all the time anyway. I don't feel I want to do that to anybody because I know what it feels like.
And how do you sort of balance it? Because you can't sort of keep everyone happy in a way. And how do you, yeah.
No, you can't keep everyone happy. No, you cannot keep everyone happy, but you will do what you believe is the right thing to do. Okay, let me give you an example of what I mean. Somebody comes to me and they say, excuse me, we want to hire you for an event. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your inquiry. How much will it cost? Oh, it's going to cost £250. Oh, but I only want to pay £50 for it. That's not your customer. But you don't need to be rude. I understand, sir. I understand this and that, but I'm not in a position to this. I do appreciate the fact that you want to have this service, but I'm not in a position to do this. I'm not going to say, oh, because I want to treat everybody like royalty, I'm now going to go broke. That's not how it works. You get what I mean? Even though you may not walk with them, you still want them to walk away with dignity because somewhere down the line, it doesn't even matter if you never see them anymore, but you don't want anybody to feel like nothing because they've crossed your path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you need to be, because you're putting so much work in, you need the money to, one, sort of keep it going, but also to fill your needs and your team's needs.
That's right. You need to grow your business. You need to scale it. So if you want to give a free gig out, give a free gig out. But it should always be on your terms. You don't need to be bullied into it. And you don't need to be rude and arrogant about it and swear at people. And once you start doing that, you're becoming extremely emotional. That's the first lesson you learn from poker. Never get too emotional about anything.
Mm. Yeah. You must have had a lot of big losses. No, I'm joking.
No, you're right. Let's put it this way. I never had the type of money to have those sort of big losses. But often it's what you have that hurts you. You get what I mean? If you can only afford 500 and you lose 500, it's as painful as the guy who owns 10 million and loses that. For you, you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the way it is.
And that's a smarter way to learn in a way, isn't it? Because you don't always have to go through the pain itself. You can see the pain going through others and see like, well, I don't want to go for what this guy's gone through.
Exactly. And you can see it. And you learn to make smart decisions. Like with business. I learn from other people now a lot more. I listen to their stories. I listen to the stories they've got. People tell me how I've owned 5 businesses, this happened and that happened. You pay attention. You pay attention and think about how this can happen to you or how it can relate to you. What do you need to do so you don't go through this?
Okay.
I find that a lot of the time people think, okay, this is how we want to structure this. This is how we should do this. This is how we must do this. And these are the rules surrounding this. Rather than what do the people want? No, what do the people want? What does this customer want? Does that make any sense? If you're a comedian and you're going to perform in, say, Leeds, yeah, what do you know about people who come from Leeds? What do they find funny?
They'll probably find it funny that they almost beat my team on the first day of the Premier League. But I'd have to know a lot about them to sort of give the answer. I'd have to really understand them. I couldn't make a surface level judgment, otherwise it wouldn't be right.
Exactly. And that's the exact same thing with comedy. If you don't spend enough time researching and understanding the people you're going to serve, you will come up with these jokes that won't work.
Yeah.
I went to watch, what's that film called? There was an Eddie Murphy film. I remember we were in America at the time. And what was it called? Nobby or something. What was it called again? It was one of his films that really bombed in the UK. But the night it came out, I was in the theater with my wife and people were laughing. I didn't get the jokes. Honestly, I didn't get them. And I wasn't surprised that the movie did so badly in the UK because there are certain jokes that you have to be part of that culture to understand. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, it's a bit, if the jokes are too niche, so if I started making jokes about certain things in Asian culture, you'd be like, what are you on about?
I'd have to have a better understanding of it. But if you were having that, if you were going to go to Africa to come up with, you're going there to perform, and those are all your jokes, you'd be wondering why aren't they laughing, but they might not get them. So when I'm having events, I like to listen to the customer and say, look, okay, tell me about your event. What would you like? What would you like me to do? What games would you like? Would you like me to tailor the games towards the kids? Would you like me to tailor them towards your grandparents? What do you want? You know, I'd like to listen and have a good idea of exactly what you want, because that's how you treat people like royalty. Find out what they want before you decide on how to go about it.
Okay.
Do you get that?
Yeah. And that's the challenge, isn't it? Because that's the hard work. You have to send in questionnaires or you have to interview them and you have to really get to know them, and you can always get it wrong.
It's the conversations that matter. I'll give you an example. I can go out now and go and buy presents and say, oh, this is for my wife. But there might be things I like and not things she likes. And she might look at them and think, oh, he's an idiot, but he's trying. Yeah. But it would have been better if I'd taken the time to listen to the things that I think, that the things I'm picking up from the things she's saying. You have different ways of asking the same questions, don't you?
Yeah, in a way that makes them feel better.
Yeah, you have different ways of asking questions. When I got married to my wife many years ago, before then, I'd known her when we were much younger. I didn't know we were going to be married one day. But it's funny, we had a conversation one day about people getting married. And I don't know why I asked that question at the time, that your ideal marriage, what would it look like? How would you like to get married? She said, that's interesting. Oh, it would be lovely to travel somewhere with a few loved ones, get on the beach and have a small ceremony. More than 10 years later, that's how we got married. But that was because I was fortunate enough to actually remember what she said. But I might have thought, okay, going out to Africa, getting 1,000 people out there might have been what she wants, and I'd be wasting money. Does that make any sense? And that's why I said, with your one, if I was a comedian and I was thinking, it's not necessarily sending out even questionnaires and all that. It's talking to the people, the person who wants the event. What do you want?
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's all about them, not you. When you start thinking about yourself, then it's the wrong way to go about it.
Yes, I think so.
But also, it's like with one thing they say in social media, to do well in it, you've got to find your niche and you find your audience. And you're not always going to be able to fit every single audience. So, and that's, as you said before, if you understand who you're up against, then you can also make that decision on, should I work with them or should I not? And then you save everyone time.
Yes. You have an idea of what, exactly. I've a lady who helped me with my LinkedIn page. Her service is structured towards women. Do you get that?
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yes. Her page says she's looking for women who want to be visible. But I found her page quite striking. And I thought, hold on a second. There's something I find really interesting about this. If she's trying to make women more visible, she's targeting women who have probably been out of the circulation for a long time or don't have a lot of business experience. I'm going to learn things in a very easy manner from this lady. So I sent her a message and she found that interesting. I said, I want you to tell me how you can help to make me more visible. She said, but my target audience are women. I said, yeah, I understand that. But that's why I'm asking you privately, that I'd be happy to pay for your service if you can teach me how I can make myself more visible. Because if you speak to a man, more often than not, they're just going to tell you, they're going to assume that you know a lot of steps already, because that's how we operate. Do you get that?
You know what? That's a truth, a blind spot. That's very true. That's what I often think as well. Definitely.
She broke it down to very simple steps that a 10-year-old could pick up.
Yeah. That's the best way to do it, because you don't know what that person knows.
Exactly. And it helped me, because at least I've become more visible since then. It's true.
And this has been, we've gone through a lot of interesting talks here, and there's a lot of exploration. And like before we start the podcast, you spoke about how sometimes you find it difficult to make decisions because you've got too many options for you. Would you be able to explain that?
Yeah, I'll tell you. When I was much younger, I was very happy-go-lucky, and I'd make decisions too quickly. And I'd mess up and get in trouble, and my parents would have a go at me and things like that. And as I grew older, people kept saying to me, you need to think about these things carefully. But what I started to notice was, the more you think about things, sometimes the more you talk yourself out of doing things. Like, I'd see a girl I like and I'd be thinking, oh, I really like her, but what if she says no? Oh no, if she says no, I'm going to have to see her in class tomorrow. Oh no, if I see her in class tomorrow, she might tell her friends. You start thinking of too many things. You start going so far ahead of yourself that you decide that, you know what, I'm just not going to ask her out.
Okay, yeah. You overcomplicate things, and you just got to, yeah.
Yeah, but if you want to make things simple, what happens a lot of the time is, you like, okay, let's look at an example. I decide I want to create a website. What do I know? Who are the people I know? What are my options? You make it as simple as possible and you say to yourself, okay, this is what I'm going to work with. If this does not work, what's the worst that can happen? I've wasted this money. Okay, I can live with that. Let's do that. If you think too long, you don't often, I see life through the eyes of a gambler. I think more often than not that if you don't take opportunities when they come, those opportunities won't be there. If you're sitting there watching a guy and overthinking how to outplay him, by the time you walk it out, he's left the room. That's poker. Or someone else has got him already. Do you get what I mean?
It's a game of life. You're never going to have all the information you need and you're never going to be perfect. You're going to win or lose. There's no going to be guaranteed way you're going to win or lose. You just have to make a decision and that's just it.
That's it. You don't think too long about it. You look at the options that are available to you and you think, you know what? Let's work with this. Because more often than not, you don't have that many options. And that's the truth. You know, you can create many options, but when you first start, you know the options that are available to you. That's why I like to work with more often than not.
And how do you focus on the main things and see what's like the thing you should focus on rather than just go...
I'm a bit of a dreamer, so my mind can often go in different ways, in different places. So what I do is once I decide on this is what I'm going to do, all the options don't matter anymore. The moment I decided I was going to have a blackjack night, I didn't think about roulette, I didn't think about poker, I just decided I am going to create a blackjack service that works. I made sure that was working and making money before I considered the roulette side of it. Because if I decided to do blackjack, poker, roulette, and all these other things, I might still be testing today. You get what I mean? You take things, you focus on one thing, and you decide, you know what? I've decided I'm going to do this. Let's do it. Now the question is, how do we do this little thing? This is achievable. And then work from there.
So it goes like you want a big goal, you decide on that, and then you look at other things on how you achieve that, and then you just make a quick decision on what feels right, the options available, you stick with that.
Yes.
In the monthly things that are going to get you there, and then you break it down little by little, and you think what's the most important decision you need to make right now.
That's the one.
And you focus on that.
Yes. Yes, and then you can always revisit your plans later.
I find it quite interesting that your gut is so often so many times right, and you're like it's so much smarter than your sometimes conscious mind.
I think I have got it wrong a lot too. I have got it wrong a lot too. But I've learned over the years that whatever I get wrong, I can. The question is, can I live with it? I mean, if I think about it and I think I can live with it, it's like when I used to go to casinos. That was my hardest problem when I first started. I would lose money and go home and get upset with myself and think about it all night. But if I'd already decided in my heart that, okay, I'm going to be taking chances with this. What happens if this happens, this happens. Once you make that decision, once it's over, you walk out of there knowing that, you know what, okay, I did this blackjack business. If it failed, at least I did it my way, like Frank Sinatra would say. You get what I mean? It doesn't matter.
How have the struggles gone? Like what have been the biggest achievements you've had and what have been the struggles?
Oh, the struggle, the biggest struggle to do with this was more to do with pricing, because I didn't have a map to follow. I think a few corporates, I tried to sell the idea to them, but my prices were way too low because I didn't do enough research on what they were paying for events. They didn't even get back to me. And I remember I sent one email and then I thought, hold on, stop. Everything you've been doing is structured towards not pestering people. You don't spam people. You don't pester them. They sent you an inquiry. You've responded. It's not for them. It's not a problem. You get what I mean? I had that. The other issue, and I'm still struggling with that, is that issue of going from being a practitioner to being a businessman. I'm still at that stage that I try to do everything. You need to be able to step back and step out of your business and say, if I'm not here for 3 months, this business needs to be able to run on its own. If not, you can't grow.
Yeah.
You can't grow. Those are the kind of challenges that I've been learning, that I've been picking up. My achievements, I would say, I've become a better entrepreneur. I'm learning more how to network with people every day. And I'm understanding the steps you need to build a business. If I was starting a business from scratch now, I wouldn't be the same guy who started my business years ago. Let's put it that way. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's been a journey. You've had a bit of a roller coaster. It's been like you've gone to Thought Park, you've gone to Nemesis Inferno. It's gone up and down, but at the end of the day, you've had a big excitement and joy.
Oh yes, I love that. That's the buzz that you get out of that. It's the journey, always.
Yeah, and there's no real regrets. It's as Conor McGregor says, you win or you learn.
That's it, and that is true. I think, to be fair, I think everything is all about the journey. If you once you get that side of it, that is all about. It's all about enjoying the journey.
Yeah, it's either win or feedback, is in a way.
Yeah, it's win or feedback. You either win or you learn. You'd never lose. You never lose. What if you did nothing? How's that going to help?
And make it fun, because if you're too focused on, obviously things got to be a certain standard, but if you're so focused on getting every single thing perfect and all right, then you're not going to enjoy it. And as you said, by the time it's done.
Honestly, when you're trying and you're enjoying it, people around you actually feel it. Do you get what I mean? They feel free. They feel free to try new things. They feel free to say new things. Oh, Jimmy, why don't you try it this way? Because they know you're flexible enough to accept what they're saying. You're happy to take what they're saying on board because you're having fun with it.
Yeah. I just want to say, you've been absolutely amazing. It's been great chatting to you, and it's been good to look at what you've done and how you've got to where you are today. And like one more thing I want to ask you is, like, who's your hero?
Oh, that's a good one. It's easy for me to say my dad, and he was definitely one of my heroes. One of my key heroes is actually a reverend. He was my teacher when I was 11 or 12. And his name is Reverend Jai Sim. I know he walks in London. He used to walk in Bath. He had this way of catching kids that were struggling. Does that make any sense? You know, at a time when everybody thinks, oh, this kid is bad or that kid is bad, he had this way of picking them out and always talking. He always wanted to hear your thoughts. Yeah? Like, I'll explain what I mean to you. There were quite a few of us who were truants when we were 12. He's the guy who would call you and sit you down and say, what are the trials you're going through? Why don't you like school? What are the subjects you like? He never shouted. He never got angry. He would ask you those questions, and he would say things like, do you mind if I check on you every day just to make sure you're around? And the way he would say it, you would smile and say, okay. And I found out that there were so many kids over the years that he had saved their education that way. He's definitely one of my heroes to this day.
Great man. Is he still around? Is he still ready?
He is. I think he lives. I spoke to him not long ago because it's funny, we reconnected a few years ago. And I know at one time he was working with the prison service for juveniles. You get what I mean? And I wasn't surprised because I thought, wow, that is a smart move on their part, because he always had that. He's probably in his early 60s now. amazing man. He's got this gift when it comes to young people. He never, ever judges them, ever. He will always listen to you. And there's this way that he will make you answer your own questions. You get what I mean? And just listen.
Yeah. And that people like that more so than you telling them the answer.
I think so. I did.
And yeah, I hope you've enjoyed coming on.
Oh, I've loved it. I've loved it. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Marvin. Definitely, I've enjoyed it.
The only thing I want to ask now is just share your product. Tell us how we can find out about you and your lovely casinos.
Thank you. It's Nomadic Fun Casino Hire. You can find me at Jimmy Schottimein, that's Schottimein. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's all about fellowship is greater than the fun. We have a fun, interactive, no money casino. I've had people calling me up asking if we can do money events. No, I think you have casinos out there that can serve that product. For us, it's all about people who want to have fun without the stress of losing money. So please contact me. Thank you.
And what about your social media stuff?
Yes, we've got the Nomadic Fun Casino Hire page on Facebook. We've got the same thing on Instagram. If you look up Nomadic Fun Casino High on Instagram, you'll find us with a lot of our lovely pictures. So please do check us out. It'll be fun to hear from you, definitely. And please remember to mention Marvin's name so I can definitely know where you met us from. Thank you.
Please do, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'll hopefully chat to you soon. Yeah. And guys, make sure you follow Jimmy. If you need any casino royale poker or anything to do with casinos, he is your man, or any fun, go to Jimmy.